Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Iron Men of the American Drug-Free Powerlifting Federation. I'm one of your hosts, Bill Sias.
And I'm Mike Stagg.
This is the ADFPF, the official ADFPF radio show, where you get information about our organization as well as information on strength and how to be a better powerlifter. Be sure you follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ADFPF. We're also on Instagram at instagram.com/ADFPF. You can also check out everything you need to know about our organization, upcoming meets, requirements for meets, etc., at our website at adfpf.net or adfpf.org. It's the same website, just two paths to get there. The ADFPF is a 501c3 nonprofit organization formed to provide all amateur athletes with legitimate drug-tested powerlifting. Strong man, strong women, and Highland Games competitions through state, local, regional, and national competitions while encouraging the growth of international amateur drug-free competition. To ensure that the ADFPF, as well as all ADFPF competitors, are governed with integrity and by the highest standards of meet structure, officiating, and organizational administration, donations to the ADFPF may be tax deductible. You can join the ADFPF by going to adfpf.net/membership. A side note for anyone listening live, Blog Talk cuts off your listening at 15 minutes. We will run over that time, but you can hear the additional footing at the archive show, which is found at the same link as you're at now. Today's theme is rules, referees, and drug testing. Mike and I are both international referees certified by the World Drug-Free Powerlifting Federation. Speaking of referees, there are basically three. There's international, that's certified through the WDFPF. There's national, which is certified by the ADFPF. And the third is in-training. In-training essentially means that you scored well on the written test, but didn't get the required 90% for national. Or you were grandfathered. I've been trying to convert all the grandfathers to nationals. Grandfathered happened early in the organization where we didn't have our own groups of referees, and we had known good referees from the previous incarnation, the ADFPA, and they were just simply grandfathered in. The benefits of being a national ref with the ADFPF is you get this really cool shirt, and your membership is paid for both international and national referees for 2 years after the last meet where you reffed. Recently, with approval of the board, I changed the national referee written test to be more like the international test. However, I wanted it to be harder so that you're well prepared for the international test should you ever choose to take that. As far as requirements for becoming a national referee, I personally don't recommend anyone, unless they've been a competing powerlifter for a few years. To take the test requires approval of a member of the board, and taking the international test requires approval of the entire board of directors and at least 2 years as a national referee. You have any questions on that, Mike?
Yeah, I've got two questions, actually. Could you review what are the minimum requirements somebody do if they would like to become a referee? What are the minimum requirements that they need to meet?
Well, first off, they need to sit down and talk with an international referee and make sure they understand the responsibilities of that. A common mistake is for people to think that being a referee means you sit in the chair and judge lifts. while that's true, there's way more to it. And if you went into the test, the written part of the test, with that as your thought, you would not possibly pass. In order to do well on the test, you're going to be extremely comfortable with at least three of the four rule books by the WDFPF. You should have read through the first, which is the Constitution and bylaws, and number two, three, and four are the rules and requirements. So you'd have to be very comfortable with that. Before you can take the test, you have to have a member of the board of directors to say that you are approved to do that. Does that answer the question?
Yes. I guess my second question then is, because there are essentially three levels of certification for referees, what are the requirements for local, national, and international certification to different meets, and are they required to set various types of records?
Sure. Let's go from bottom up, and not to imply that there's anything lower than the other. But if you come to my gym to compete in a meet that we're running, where all of our meets are fully sanctioned, and you can set American records up there, and you can be confident that all of the referees sitting in the chairs are national referees, unless we run short, in which case we would add an in-training referee, or in the case where I have an in-training referee that's anxious to move up to national, we would give him a lot of time in the chair to help him get ready for that. So a local meet requires national referees so that you can set American records. From there, we go up to a state meet, which is basically the same requirements. At a state meet, you're able to set the same American records and state records, of course, as well as you could at the previous meet we talked about. And that will have a preponderance of national referees. Frequently, international referees will be there as well because they like to keep their skills sharp and they love powerlifting. At national meets, because you can set world records at a national meet and national records at national meets, we require international referees. That's why it's important for lifters to know if they're breaking a record so that they can let the announcer know that we need international referees and we can get the right judges in the seat at the right time. It would be very sad to be prepared to break a world record only to find out that you didn't have the right judges in the chairs. So basically it goes from top down briefly now. International and national meets require international referees, though there will be national referees at a national meet. Anytime records are being broken, an international referee needs to be in each of the three chairs. At state and regional meets, national and in-training referees are absolutely fine, but I require national referees for American records. Does that answer your question okay?
Yes. Yes, that does.
Good.
So,
and if you don't, go ahead.
Okay, so I was to go ahead and talk about some of the rules, Bill, and unless you had a last thought there that you wanted to complete.
No, that's perfect. I was just going to ask you if you were ready to talk about rules, and since you are, take it away.
Okay. So one of the questions that we will often get, there's so many different powerlifting federations out there now, and the rules are very similar between all of the organizations, but there are some significant differences that we see in the ADFPF and WDFPF that do vary from all other organizations. So the first thing that I want to go over with the rules is that our rules are governed by the World Drug-Free Powerlifting Federation. So when you go to our website and you read the WDFPF rule book, that is our rule book as well. So we will follow their rules relative to equipment, relative to the lifts, and all of the other requirements that are in there. There's some requirements around you must weigh in 2 hours before lifting starts. That's a significant difference from some other organizations. I believe there are even organizations that allow a 48-hour weigh-in rule. In our organization, you must weigh in within 2 hours of the scheduled start of lifting. So with that, I'm going to briefly go through some of the more common rules and point out some what I believe are significant differences to the other organizations. The first rule governs what type of lifting attire you have to have. So we require, as most organizations do, a one-piece lifting suit. In the equipped division, that can be a super suit that's single ply. In the raw division, it needs to be a non-supportive one-piece singlet. I guess would be the term most people use, like a wrestling singlet. In the raw division or unequipped division, you are allowed to wear a legal belt, and you are allowed to use wrist wraps. No other supportive gear is allowed. That is a difference from some of the other organizations that do allow knee sleeves. The ADFPF does not allow knee sleeves while squatting in the unequipped division. In the equipped division, you are allowed to wear knee sleeves or knee wraps if you like. They have to meet the minimum, or the maximum, I should say, length requirements and width requirements as laid out in the rule book. So you are allowed to wear those. In fact, in the equipped division, it is required to wear supportive gear to differentiate those lifts from the unequipped division. So on the bench press, you are in the unequipped division, you can wear a non-supportive shirt, basically a t-shirt. We do allow compression shirts as long as they are deemed to be of a material that is not supportive on the lift. In other words, it must have a reasonable amount of flex and stretch to it. In the equipped division, you can wear a single-ply bench press shirt, and it must be closed on the back. It cannot be an open shirt that you will see in some other divisions. And then moving on to the deadlift. The deadlift is probably the simplest with respect to the equipment. You must wear a singlet or one-piece suit. In the equipped division, you may opt to also wear knee sleeves or wraps. And the t-shirt is optional. A t-shirt is required in the squat and the bench press. In a deadlift, a t-shirt is optional, although there are some other requirements for women who opt to not wear a t-shirt. There are some rules about what they must wear under their singlet to, let's say, maintain some modesty. So specific to the lifts themselves, the squat, it's required. There's three signals. You unrack the weight. You must stand with your knees erect, or locked, I should say. If you stand erect with your knees locked, the referee will give you the down command. When you get the down command, you must squat so that the top of the hip joint is below the top of the knee. That is illustrated in the rule book. I believe every organization has essentially the same rule, but you will notice some significant interpretations of that rule between some of the organizations. Once you stand back up with the weight, you're required to hold it with your knees locked, demonstrating control of the lift, and then the referee will tell you to rack it. So you may not be assisted in any way in the squat from the time you get the squat command to the time you get the rack command. Before you get either of those lifts, some assistance can be given if you have problems with getting it out of the rack or something to that effect, which is not common, but occasionally does happen. And when you get the rack command, the spotters will generally immediately grab the sides of the weight to help walk you in with the weight. Moving to the bench press, there's three commands. You you will set up. You can have a handoff from a spotter optionally. You don't have to do that. We generally recommend you do. You must hold the bar with your arms locked, demonstrating control of it. When you have control demonstrated, the referee will tell you to start, at which point you have to lower the bar to your chest, and you must stop. Once the bar stops, the referee will give you the press command. You press the bar up and hold it in the locked position for the rack command. At that point, the lift is completed. Some things during the lift, your feet must be flat on the floor. This is a difference with some other organizations, the ADFPF. Your feet must be flat, meaning the heels are down. Your head must stay down on the bench from the time you get the start command, from the time you get the rack command, as your shoulders and your hips must also maintain contact with the bench during the whole lift. You can flex your hips, but if they come off the bench, that would be cause for disqualification. In the deadlift, it's the simplest with respect to the commands. When you walk out, whenever you're ready, you lift the bar. And when you stand up with your shoulders erect and your knees locked, you will get the down command. When you put the bar down, you must control it as it goes down. You can return it as fast as gravity will control it. But if you lose your grip or you slam it or you drop it, those would be causes for disqualification in the deadlift. So we also get, from time to time, we get questions from lifters about if we want to change a rule or if the organization would like to petition the WDFPF to change a rule, how that process works. So the board of directors decides that we would like to make a proposal to change a rule, and I will give an example of that here in just a moment, but we ask the WDFPF to put that on the agenda for their next international meeting, which are typically held in conjunction with the World Meets, and then the proposal is made to the WDFPF governing body, which is made up of the WDFPF board of directors, as well as member nations. Each nation has a specified number of participants who are allowed to vote on each proposal with the WDFPF. And then based on that, once a rule is changed, I believe it is a minimum of 2 years before that can be revisited and changed again. So the
That's
most
correct.
Recent example of that is as the styles of wrestling singlets have changed and what's commercially available, the length of the leg on a wrestling singlet is longer than what the rule book would allow for a super suit. So a petition was made to allow the wrestling singlet, since it's a non-supportive unit, for the legs to actually extend further, which makes it much easier to find off-the-shelf lifting attire that conforms with the specifications in the book. And that was changed, I believe, about 3 years ago or so. And the only rule there is, it can be basically as long as you want, but it cannot extend over the knees. So are there any questions relative to rules, Bill, or anything you believe that I should clarify?
Well, as you know, if you go to the website and do the contact, hit the contact tab, you can ask questions, and all those questions come directly to me. And one that's come frequently, I'm going to give you two at once. The first is about Velcro belts, and the second is about boxer shorts. So would you like to address both of those?
Yes, I will address both of those. Relative to Velcro belts, assuming that the width of the belt and the thickness and the other rules are conforming, Velcro is allowed. There are some stipulations. The Velcro cannot go all the way around the belt, such that you basically cannot get a double wrap, if you will, on the belt. The Velcro has to, just extend basically just to fasten and not wrap around so far that it's actually supportive? To be honest, we get that question, but I'm yet to see a Velcro belt that actually meets the requirements as laid out in the book. I'm not going to say that the belts don't exist, but I haven't seen them. So,
me too.
The second question that you asked relative to boxer shorts or briefs, it is required that your undergarments, and I'm going to address for women also bras, but the undergarments must essentially a bikini style brief. In other words, it cannot have legs in it. It has to have a brief, and it has to, be supportive. It can't be loose. And that's actually for safety reasons. I'm sure that some men can appreciate why you would not want to literally be wearing boxer briefs. It is required to wear an undergarment as well. I have gotten questions before, is it even required to wear an undergarment? It is required. And relative to bras, I know you didn't ask this, but for the women that are lifting, your bras cannot be supportive on their own, and they cannot have underwire in them. So essentially, if you set your bra on the table, it cannot maintain its form on its own. And that's essentially the criteria used for women when wearing a bra.
Can I add one thing to that? The Victoria's Secret sports bra has under plastic, and that is also not allowed. It's a supportive bra as well, but it's not using an underwire. It's using plastic inserts.
Okay. So if we don't have anything else, Bill, we wanted to talk about drug testing. So unless you have any objection, I'm going to go into that.
Go for it.
So we get a lot of questions about drug testing. So I'm going to start off by saying, unapologetically, we are strict with our drug testing. We are a drug-tested federation, and I personally do not believe in good faith that an organization can be both drug-tested and non-drug-tested. To me, it's a philosophy. You want lifters to come out. You want them to compete cleanly and fairly against other lifters. So to that end, we are strict. Our drug tests for non-international meets are sent through Quest Diagnostics Laboratories, and that's where we do them. For all international meets, the testing is even more strict. We go through WADA, which, as many people know, is the governing body for the IOC, and they even check for more substances. They go more in depth than what Quest does. So the way we get drug tested, the first thing I'm going to point out to any listeners, we are not random. We target test. When you come into a meet, we test the people that we believe are likely using something. And we test a minimum of 10% of the lifters. So if we have a meet where we really don't believe anybody is using anything, at that point we will likely target the highest coefficient total, or we may also just test. It may be somewhat random. We do have some criteria we look at that I'm not going to go into detail here, but we typically will target people for one reason or another, and sometimes it's just as simple as making sure that everything is honest and people understand that. So what happens when there's a drug test? You'll be notified. You fill out the paperwork. You will be required to give a urine sample that will be witnessed, and then the lifter being tested handles the sample. They split the urine into the A and B sample. They seal it. They place it in the bag, and we seal it. So the reason for that is so that there can be no accusations in the case of a positive test that it was tampered with, and once that is sealed, it can only be destructively opened. So it's sent to the laboratory. They verify that there has been no tampering of the sample, and then they destructively open the sample and test it, and the results are sent back. We do review the results, and we will not notify a lifter unless there's an issue. If a lifter has a question, certainly we'll answer that, but we will not notify them unless there is an issue. I do want to point out we also have out-of-competition testing. There are certain markers that I may get on tests that are done where the test may pass, but there may be some markers in there that were suspect. And when we see that, more than likely we are going to come back at a later unannounced date and do an out-of-competition test on an individual. And we have been successful at catching people using illegal substances like that. So there's a number of substances that can cause you to fail, and not all of them are steroids. I would encourage anybody to go to the website globaldro.com and type in any medication you're on, and that will tell you if the substance that you're using is legal or illegal for both in competition and out of competition testing. There are some substances that you're allowed to take out of competition. You're just not allowed to have them in your system on the day of the competition. So I believe that's all I've got there, Bill, unless you have anything to add. Okay.
No, that covers it. It covers it pretty well. I can't think of anything else. So shall we wrap it up? Because I think we're out of time. I appreciate all of you tuning in to our show. And I wanted to invite you to our next show where we will discuss raw versus equipped lifting. You can listen to our show live every Sunday evening here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll post the link on Facebook and on our website so you'll be able to find us. The ADFPF also has a weekly email update related to our website. You can subscribe to that by scrolling down to the bottom of the event calendar page at adfpf.net/meetcalendar. We'd also like to encourage our listeners to submit questions to us based on the current week's theme. We'll answer as many as we can at the end of the show. Send your questions to us on Facebook. Our Facebook page again is facebook.com/ADFPF. So until next week, I'm Bill Sias. Remember, the bar is loaded.
And I'm Mike Stagg. Stay strong.
Oh, 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 oh. Everybody was kung fu.